This is a true crime roundup from the On Deadline podcast. We explore crime stories reported on by Odyssey's radio newsrooms across the country. I'm your host, Lauren Berry. We have some quick true crime updates, including an update on the Charlie Kirk assassination case, an update on the Lynette Hooker disappearance, and a Michigan crime that's become the inspiration for a novel. We'll start with a case out of Odyssey Station WCCO News Talk in the Twin Cities.
35-year-old Jasmine Laws is accused of holding her 15-year-old daughter underwater on the 4th of July on a lake in Otter Tail County. According to court documents, Laws claims she took her daughter's phone and threw it in the water, which started a physical fight. She claims she acted in self-defense and the teen's head was never submerged, but multiple witnesses disputed her account. Laws is scheduled to appear in court for her next hearing on August 26th. Mark Fry, News Talk 830 WCCO.
In the Philadelphia area, Odyssey Station KYW News Radio provided an update on a recent shooting death.
A 38-year-old Philadelphia man was arrested and charged in connection with a shooting in Pensauken last week. The Camden County Prosecutor's Office says Khalif Armstrong beat the victim with a bat before shooting him on Haddonfield Road last Thursday. The victim was listed in critical but stable condition. Armstrong is charged with first-degree attempted murder, aggravated assault, and related offenses.
Odyssey Station KCBS Radio in the Bay Area reported on an attempted murder case.
From Oakland, Damian Clay is facing a charge of attempted murder, Mike.
We'll see that hearing gets underway in just about 25 minutes here at Alameda Superior Court. Now, the incident happened just after 1:30 in the morning, May 2nd on 18th Street, after the monthly First Friday gathering in Oakland. Damian Clay allegedly running on foot after hitting and injuring eight people. He was only just arrested last week. Alameda County District Attorney Ursula Jones Dixon calls the incident a, quote, intentional act of extreme violence. Legal analyst Stephen Clark.
I think a big factor will be reverse engineering what led up to this incident to determine whether this was reckless driving or an intent to kill.
Now, Oakland has stepped up security at First Fridays, and Oakland Interim Police Chief James Beer says most issues don't happen within the scope of the event itself.
In fact, it occurs after the event's completely done.
An attempted murder conviction could carry up to a lifetime sentence. Reporting live in Oakland, Mike DeWald.
Odyssey Station WWJ News Radio in Detroit reported on multiple developing crime stories this week, including an incident that broke out at a gas station.
Taylor police attempted to pull over a stolen U-Haul on Monday morning around 11:30. The driver eventually pulled into the gas station where authorities say he allegedly pointed a gun at officers. The officers fired at him and he was taken to a local hospital for treatment. 38-year-old Sisquindry Smith was arraigned today on multiple charges, including fleeing and eluding, felon in possession of a firearm, and resisting and obstructing a police officer. His bond was set at $75,000. Smith's bond conditions include not leaving the state, surrendering his driver's license and passport, and wearing a GPS tether.
Then WWJ reported that
a Detroit man has been arraigned on first-degree murder and felony gun charges in connection to the fatal shooting of his girlfriend at their home. 49-year-old LaToya Reeves was shot in the chest and in the hand. She was taken to a local hospital where she later died from her injuries. During 69-year-old Keith Custer's arraignment earlier today, a correction staff said they were told that he had dementia. He didn't answer any questions throughout his appearance. Defense attorney Christina Harris says the initial meeting between her office and Custer ended without him responding to any of their questions.
I don't know for sure that this is indeed Keith Custer. He has not identified himself. The Detroit Detention Center states that they have identified him as such, and I object to his arraignment until we can properly interview him.
He was remanded until his probable cause hearing on July 20th.
A new novel from Pulitzer Prize winner Brian Gruley, a Metro Detroit native, just came out. This week, Gruley joined WWJ News Radio to discuss the new book and how it's inspired by a real Michigan crime story.
There is a new book out called River Deep. It is the second in a Bitter Frost series by author Brian Gruley, who hails from Detroit and actually at one time worked for the Detroit News and Bloomberg Businessweek, The Wall Street Journal, where you worked in the Washington Bureau, and then the Chicago Bureau. And you were part of a team at the Journal that won a Pulitzer Prize for coverage of 9/11. But you've turned to being an author. And what is this new book all about?
River Deep, which is set in the fictional northern Michigan town of Bitter Frost, is in a sentence about a woman who is accused of drowning her twin infant boys in a river, driving them in, and they drown.
And so I guess it kind of follows the story of a lawyer who defends her?
Yes. Catriona Delaney is the woman who is accused, and her lawyer who eventually winds up defending her is Devin Payne, who was one of the key characters in the first Bitter Frost book. And the Payne family and the Delaney family don't really get along, so it makes for a rather fraught, but in my view, the author, interesting relationship going forward.
And then do you have other recurring characters in the second book?
Yes, there's a detective named Garth Klimek. He's in there. Jimmy Baker is a character who was really the focus of the first book. He's less important in this one, but he still plays a significant role. And then there's a couple of new characters, including Catriona, who is mentioned only briefly a couple of times in Bitter Frost, and now she is a major character and a point of view character. You're in her head once in a while.
And she's the person on trial, correct?
Yes, that's correct. And the story was inspired, if that's the word, Beth, by an actual case that occurred right down there, 1989, a guy named Larry Delisle drove his wife and his four young children into the Detroit River. The kids all died. And Delisle went through some hell. He's in prison, a life conviction, but he was interrogated for eight and a half hours and allegedly confessed. And the alleged confession got leaked to the media, and it was a mess. He has appealed that conviction many times over. And that's kind of what got me interested, is his appeals. Because it made me think, well, maybe he's not the only bad guy here.
Here's a WWJ report on Delisle from 2024.
The life sentence given to a Michigan man for murdering his four children more than 30 years ago. Lawrence Delisle drove his station wagon into the Detroit River in Wyandotte. He and his then wife escaped. Delisle told the jury that his leg cramped and he couldn't get his foot off the accelerator. However, the jury didn't believe it and he was convicted. Delisle is asking the parole board to commute his sentence.
That year, Delisle's ex-wife blamed him for their children's deaths after years of supporting him. Prison records show that Delisle was still incarcerated in Michigan as of this year. 10 years ago this month, a 32-year-old black man named Philandro Castile was shot by police at a traffic stop. His killing led to protests, and the cop who shot him multiple times at close range was eventually acquitted, but let go by the police department. WCCO's Chad Hartman reflected on the case this week.
Officer Anima Yanez pulled him over. Taillight was out. And remember, they were looking for a suspect in a gas station robbery a few days earlier, and stopped him because his wide-set nose. Oh, that seems fair. There doesn't seem anything troubling to that, does it, Dave? Every person who might have a wide-set nose, we should be pursuing with a robbery of a gas station, of course, but from a vehicle. We're going to see that someone's wide-set nose. That's just disgusting, right? So, Philando's pulled over. Officer told him his taillight was out. Asked for his license and registration. Philando says, "Sir, I have to tell you, I do have a firearm on me. Don't reach for it then. Don't pull it out. I'm not pulling it out," Castile said. And seconds later, as we know, shot after shot after shot, killed Philando Castile. And all of it on a live stream. It's right where I was going. It was live streamed on Facebook by his girlfriend, Diamond Reynolds.
Think about what a big story that became in town.
Yeah.
Text me right now, 651-461-9226. When you think of this story, what comes to mind? It's just got to be the video, right? I mean,
of course. Yeah, it's the fact that there was video, that we had an incident of this magnitude live streamed on the internet, of course, not knowing what was going to happen.
Yep.
When the video began rolling. And then Diamond Reynolds' reaction.
Yes.
As
you killed him.
He's bleeding.
Yeah, and obviously very, very few saw it live, but went viral like this.
Mm-hmm.
And the endless debates. Okay. Did the right thing to say, I do have a firearm on me. But when he's reaching, is there confusion? The panic. The uncertainty. The panic from the officer. The panic afterwards. Seven shots. And then the decision by Ramsey County Attorney John Choi. Because this wasn't a decision in front of a grand jury. This was him charging manslaughter. First time it had been charged, right? In our state. And he's found not guilty. Now we would have it later with, what was her name? I have it here. Justine Ruschek. Was that the name in the alley?
Justine Ruschek Damon, I believe, was
yeah,
the full name.
Right. And obviously we'd have George Floyd. Right. And obviously George Floyd became international. But the Philando story in our state, I mean, we weren't doing the show together. Where were you in 16? What station are you in?
I was at the 1500.
You're 1500, right? I bet even as sports, as Dan wanted 1500 to be at that point, it was unavoidable for you guys at times.
Yeah, it was not something we talked about because it was sports focused, but you yeah. couldn't avoid the news.
You could not avoid.
Certainly not. I mean, you said it was big here, and it was obviously the biggest here, but the fact that it was available online and, as you said, viral like that, it was well beyond just the Twin Cities and Minnesota borders. I mean, this was, at the very least, nationwide.
Yeah.
It wasn't to the magnitude of George Floyd.
No.
For whatever reason, why this, you know, why that one garnered more attention and protests versus this. Maybe it's just because it was just adding one more to the fire, and finally George Floyd was the tipping point. I don't know, but.
Yeah. It was. Well, it's tragic, right?
Of course.
Here's a man. We would find out everything that he was doing at school, how popular he was. And in my opinion, the officer, without a doubt, made significant mistakes. It doesn't hurt him in any way comparable to Philando, because Philando was gone. But think about what it did for the officer's life. And then, like somebody says, police, racial profiling, what occurs to me? Sure as hell sounded like it to me, right? At the time, nothing's changed my mind. Has it changed your mind?
No.
So we've had John Choi talking about this because there were changes in 2021 involving Ramsey County and John Choi. Movie violations decrease to more than 90% of the traffic stops, and equipment violations to fall 10% or less in participating cities. St. Paul moving violations comprise about 74% of traffic stops in the 4 years before the shift. So think about that. The dramatic for these pretextual stops. Dramatic impact, John Choi said, around building community trust, getting to a better version of public safety, getting police really focused on the types of traffic enforcement that matter, speeding, careless driving, and impaired driving. You know, and there, I will admit at first I was torn on this too. Okay, because can you stop individuals who are potentially wanted by the law, involved in legal issues? But the data's held up on the pretextual stops and the amount of crime and who it's prevented. Sure, in an ideal world, Dave, where whites and blacks and men and women and everyone would be stopped and treated the same way, so those pretextual stops could continue. And this is not in any way, let me be crystal clear on this, in any way saying all officers, because it's not. It is absolutely not. But it's too many. The nose, you're stopping somebody because their nose looks like maybe something. And by the way, we would find out, no, not close. So I think it's the right move, don't you? Because the racial profiling in this town and across this country has been proven for certain officers. It's nowhere near the majority, but it's too damn many. And the sooner those folks are removed from the department, the better. And to allow the folks who are good, very good, and great, and brilliant at their jobs to do their jobs where they don't look at it that way. But sadly, those numbers are still up.
Since this April, the mystery of what happened to Lynette Hooker, a woman who went missing on a boat ride in the Bahamas, has been stumping investigators. While her family has said they're suspicious of her husband, Brian, here's a new update on the case from Dana Wright and Sam Stevie III of the Dana and Parks Show out of Odyssey Station KMBZ in Kansas City.
All right, what's the update with Lynette Hooker?
So we have been keeping up with this story ever since it happened when she was reported missing on April 5th. Initially, her husband, Brian Hooker, claimed that they were on their dinghy headed back to their sailboat Soulmate from Elbow Cay in the Bahamas.
Yeah.
When Lynette just magically, mysteriously bounced off the dinghy with the keys in her hand.
Yep.
And was swept away by rough waters caused by the storm. He, despite having his cell phone on him, claimed he had no cell service, mm-hmm. claimed he tried for hours to find her in the dark, in the rapid water, made it all the way back to the sailboat. All these different details coming out, none of them making sense. The update today. Investigators with the Coast Guard are looking into the possibility that the Michigan woman who went missing in the Bahamas earlier this year may not have fallen overboard from a dinghy that her husband claimed, but instead
was thrown,
made it back to the couple's sailboat before she disappeared.
Oh, no way.
I told you, Brian Hooker previously told authorities that his wife had fallen overboard from the dinghy. They believe that there may have been a fight, a physical altercation aboard the sailboat. Of course, Brian Hooker has not been charged with the crime and denies any wrongdoing.
I've also, real quick, Sam, I've also read that according to GPS location data from either his Apple Watch or the boat or cell phones or whatever, that where he claimed they were when this happened does not align with the GPS data investigators have.
It would have also been very out of line from where he was heading to where he was going. The claim was they were returning from the Cay to the sailboat, and where he claimed she went missing was out in the middle of the bay. It doesn't make any sense. Investigators also found that he had technology on the boat, a very expensive infrared camera that looks for heat sequences out in the water for if you're out
sailing. That he didn't use to find her.
And somebody falls, you can use that to see where they are in the water, even if it's dark, even if it's rainy. He did not use that. There was also a camera aboard the boat that, you know, just magically stopped working right before she went missing.
Yeah.
He also claimed that he was going to stay in the Bahamas until they found his wife. He then flew back to the United States within a day. And nobody knows where he is now. I hope authorities do, because I foresee charges coming down the pipeline.
Another high-profile case development this week happened in the Utah courtroom, where the preliminary hearing for Tyler Robinson, the alleged assassin of conservative activist Charlie Kirk, was held. Robinson allegedly gunned down the activist last September while he was on a college campus for a speaking tour. Tara Servatius of Odyssey Station 989 Word News Talk in South Carolina discussed the hearing with her co-host, Lee Rogers.
Lee, it's going to be interesting to see if they offer Tyler Robinson a plea deal. They've got great evidence in this case. We've seen more of it. In fact, there's a handwritten note in which he confesses to this. It made his mother gasp in the courtroom when she saw it. It wasn't supposed to actually get out. It wasn't supposed to be presented till the trial, but the video camera that was playing, they were showing another piece of evidence, accidentally, like, kind of swiped over it, and you can read it. So he, that would be the fourth time. That's a fourth confession. I mean, they got this guy coming and going.
Yeah.
So normally, if I'm a prosecutor, I'm not playing ball. I'm going, no, I'm not offering you a plea.
Right. Why? Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to this True Crime Roundup from the On Deadline podcast. This episode was written and produced by me, Lauren Berry. Special thanks to WCCO News and Talk in the Twin Cities, KYW News Radio in Philadelphia, KCBS Radio in the Bay Area, WWJ News Radio in Detroit, The Tara Show out of 989 Word in South Carolina, The Dana and Parks Show out of KMBZ in Kansas City, A New Morning out of WBEN News and Talk in Buffalo, and The Scoot Show out of WWL in New Orleans. You can find these programs on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts. You can find these true crime roundups by subscribing to the On Deadline podcast, the Who Killed Strawberry podcast, or the Bitter Academia podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.